T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good morning and welcome to The Public File. I'm Doug Thomas, and my guest for this segment is Steve Swat, award-winning political reporter, public affairs executive, and adjunct professor at Sac State. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Doug.
And we'll dive into current affairs in a minute, but first, your wife Susie, Jeff Raymundo, and Dr. Rebecca LaValle wrote a book called Game Changers, 12 Elections That Transformed California, and I'm just fascinated by that book. How did you guys decide on which 12 elections to focus on?
Well, that's an interesting question because we spent a lot of time on that and we went back and forth and we had selected 12 because that just sounded good.
Sure.
And then we tried to decide, you know, based on our historical knowledge and, you know, you have to remember that I spent 23 years at KCRA covering the state capitol and Jeff spent over 20 years covering the capitol for the Sacramento Bee and Becky covered the capitol for United Press International and my wife worked in the capitol for 30 years. And so we had some institutional memory and knowledge there, plus we're all history buffs. We just sort of, talked it through and walked through the various important elections, and then we talked to some other people. We talked to some historians, and we talked to some of our neighbors who happen to have been Capitol workers. One of my neighbors is a former state senator, and he gave me some advice, not that we took it, but he did give us some
sure.
advice. And we followed a theme that history is not a series of unrelated events, and history really is related events, and there's a cause and effect. And we came up with some threads that last over 150 years in California and determined the importance of those elections on that. For example, we picked 1861 as one of our elections, and that was the election of Leland Stanford. Now, he only spent 2 years in office, and he didn't do much, except what he did do is that he muscled through 7 pieces of legislation that put money into his railroad. And he kept his job as president of the Central Pacific Railroad while he was governor.
Wow.
So he not only got rich off being governor, but he also jump-started the railroad. And, of course, the railroad turned into the Transcontinental Railroad and then the Southern Pacific and all of its abuse in California. And that led to the Progressives and Hiram Johnson, which is another one of our elections in 1910. And then the Progressives led to changes in the legislature and changes in society in California. And then that led to other changes down the road. And so we looked at the significance and the impact of these elections, not just at the time, of course, but moving forward 20, 30, 50 years.
Other than this last one, which do you consider to be some of the most important elections in California history?
For a number of reasons. I think the 1910 election of Hiram Johnson and the Progressives was probably the most impactful election in California history, because think of what they gave Californians. As soon as they came into office after the 1910 election, they put 23 constitutional amendments on the ballot for a special election in 1911, and that included regulation of the railroad, which was the biggest industry in California.
Sure.
But it gave us our direct democracy, the initiative, the recall, the referendum, new child labor laws, women's vote. I mean, that was a monumental election, and I happen to think that's probably the most important election in California history. And then if you move forward, I mean, you could look at the 1978 election, the Proposition 13 election as the tax revolt, but that was basically an effect of what happened in 1911, creating the initiative process. So I think that was very important. I think Pat Brown's election and his 8 years were very important because we expanded the highway system, we expanded the University of California, then the water project, the North-South Water Project. And so I think that was extremely important.
And while we're on the subject of historic elections, let's touch on the governor's race of 1934.
Well, that was interesting because that was Upton Sinclair, who was a socialist, but he joined the Democratic Party to run for governor in 1934. he was a Democrat, and he did really well in the primary election, and he ran against Frank Merriam, who was a former lieutenant governor who acceded to the governorship, and he had the Republican establishment. And that was probably, without a doubt, the dirtiest campaign in California history, but it also saw the emergence, for the first time, of professional political consultants. You had a consulting team, Baxter and Whitaker, and they were cutthroat, and they really showed you what political campaigns could be like in the future. I mean, they went after Upton Sinclair with a vengeance and accused him, of course, of being a socialist, all of his positions. And he was a famous novelist before he went into politics.
Right.
And they took individual quotes out of various books from his characters and attributed those quotes to him. And it was quite a campaign. It's been known as the campaign of the century in California.
Wow. And it's almost a century ago, back in 1934.
I should also say that since we last talked, the four of us have written another book, and it's called Paving the Way, A Women's Struggle for Political Equality in California, another political history in California. The reason we did that was after that first book we wrote, Game Changers, we realized where were the women in our book. And so we tried to do some research of women making important contributions to California's political system and public policy, and we couldn't find anything in the history books, very, very little. So we really dug deeper, and we went back and looked at old newspapers and collections at various libraries and oral histories and things like that. And we came up with a book all about women, going back to the gold rush to the present, how they have made a significant difference, including their fight for the vote and their fight for anti-corruption environmental work over the years. So that's kind of interesting, too.
Paving the Way. Yeah, it's really stunning that here we are in 2021, and women are still looked at as second-class citizens in the way that they make less than men do, and all that kind of stuff just drives me crazy.
Yeah, that is interesting, and you know, there are certainly efforts to change that. In the political realm, women are making gains, certainly, although California is one of only 20 states that has never elected a woman governor. Some states have elected women governors on many occasions. In the current legislature, out of 120 members, you have 36 women, which is pretty good, but it's certainly not parity. That's a real problem, and getting parity is very, very difficult. It's still a man's world. More men are running than women, although more women are running than ever before, and men are still winning. What is interesting is a couple of the interviews we did for our book, we talked to various political figures about the importance of electing women, not just because they're women, but women bring a different perspective to public policy. And studies do show that women are more apt to find and seek consensus than men. They also care about some issues that a lot of men don't care about, whether it's family issues, children's issues, education type issues. And so bringing in a more diverse, based on gender, more diverse elected officials can change the way public policy is developed in California.
Let's talk about the last 4 years, Steve, an absolutely incredible time in our history.
No question about it. The last 4 years, the political divide in the nation has widened, thanks in large part to a president who promoted it, and he used it to his political advantage. Former President Trump believed that if he could consolidate tens of millions of aggrieved citizens, especially outside the cities, he could create a governing coalition, and he did. He broke all the norms. He violated long-held traditions. He demanded and received complete loyalty, and he achieved cult-like status among nearly half of the electorate in this country.
You mentioned earlier women in politics. California's never had a female governor, but hey, guess what? We've got a vice president from California now.
Yeah, the situation with California and Washington has changed so dramatically just since the election. I mean, California for the last 4 years was Washington's whipping boy.
Right.
Now, Californians have the greatest influence in Washington since Ronald Reagan. I mean, think about it. California filed more than 120 lawsuits against the Trump administration over the environment, vehicle admissions, census, immigration, health care. And Trump loved to tweet his dislike for California. He threatened to send in troops to deal with homelessness. He threatened to withhold money from sanctuary cities. He yanked California's ability to set our own vehicle emission standards.
Right.
And so now you have President Joe Biden, who campaigned as a moderate, but so far is governing as a liberal, not a Bernie Sanders liberal, but liberal nonetheless, and he has already issued a number of executive orders that are fully in line with the sentiment in California of California voters. Get back into the Paris Accords, stricter emission requirements for cars, halt in the border wall construction, creating a path to citizenship for immigrants, and of course that huge $1.9 $1 trillion stimulus is what most Californians, in fact, most Americans, even Republicans, say they want. I mean, he's made climate change a national priority, which is big in California. That has been interesting. And so many prominent Californians, I mean, the vice president is only one, will play such a huge role in President Biden's decision-making process. Kamala Harris won't merely be an emissary to funerals or foreign leaders. I mean, she will have a great deal of clout inside the White House. Plus, she's the tie-breaking vote in the U.S. Senate. And that's more clout than previous vice presidents. But look at the cabinet that President Biden is assembling. I mean, it is littered with Californians. I mean, Javier Becerra, who is now going through the confirmation process, graduate of McClatchy High School in Sacramento, will be the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which means he will have oversight of the vaccination plans moving forward, healthcare expansion. Alejandro Mayorkas from Los Angeles and a student from UC Berkeley is the new Director of Homeland Security, so he will have oversight of immigration and cyber attacks, terrorism, both national and foreign terrorism. Jennifer Granholm, another professor at UC Berkeley, is now Secretary of Energy, so vehicle emissions will be in her purview. Janet Yellen, yet another California professor from Berkeley, is the Secretary of Treasury, so she'll be in charge of monetary policy. Then you have Isabel Guzman, who is the new head of the SBA, Small Business Agency, and she was a small business advocate in California. And it goes on, including the leaders in the House with Nancy Pelosi, the only Californian ever elected speaker, and then the Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, from Bakersfield. It will really be an amazing couple years of California influence.
You're listening to The Public File. I'm Doug Thomas, and my guest this morning is Steve Swat. He's got a couple of books out, Game Changers, 12 Elections That Transformed California, and also Paving the Way is the new one. And I bet we can find them on Amazon. Is that right, Steve?
Yes, you can.
Where do you think the Republican Party is headed?
That is very interesting. You know, on January 19th, the day before President Biden's inauguration, then-President Trump said that the movement that he started is only the beginning. And Trump now, I think, is starting on his revenge tour against Republicans who he believes who have wronged him. He has belittled Mitch McConnell, leading Republican in the U.S. Senate, who voted against Trump's conviction during the impeachment but still blamed him for the insurrection. For 4 years, McConnell was really Trump's water boy. Now he's on Trump's enemies list. The party is being split into a couple of pieces. I mean, 75% of Republicans nationally say they are loyal to Donald Trump, not loyal to the Republican Party. And I think most Republicans would follow him to the ends of the earth, and even if that means off a cliff. And by that, I mean, under Trump's watch, the Republicans lost the House, they lost the Senate, they lost the presidency. And yet, Republicans are willing to stick with him. Still, there are many disaffected Republicans who want the party to return to its roots as a party of constitutional originalism, a party that fights abuse and power and believes in the rule of law, a party against big government and for free trade, a party that occupies a place of leadership in the world, challenging Russia, for example. Also a party, I might say, that believes in facts and not unproven conspiracies. But you have this split, and right now it's about 3-1, loyalty to Trump versus loyalty to the party and its principles. My belief is that the Republican Party, really like the nation as a whole, is divided by self-definition and region and culture. And the U.S. is changing demographically. White Christian America is being eclipsed by a majority-minority society, and that frightens a lot of people. And the response, in some cases, has been violent. I mean, there's no doubt there's been a rise in white nationalism and white supremacist groups that used to be in the shadows. You know, I just think these divides are going on within the Republican Party. You have some of those who have gone against Trump. They voted for impeachment, for example. They are being censured by state and local Republican parties. Trump remains popular. You may have heard of Josh Hawley. He's that senator from Missouri who really led the fight against certifying the election. He has been vilified by Republican never-Trumpers for leading that fight. And he lost corporate backers after that January 6th insurrection. But within a few days, he had raised $1 million among small donors who backed his challenge of the election. And again, those Republicans who backed impeachment are now being censured by state and local party officials. What is interesting, though, is that since January the 6th, nationwide, about 140,000 registered Republicans have dropped their registration in the 25 states that have available data. And that includes here in California, 33,000 California Republicans have quit the party. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but that's 0.5% of the total Republican registrants in California, and that can certainly make a difference in certain elections. In Arizona, 10,000 have gone off the rolls. In Pennsylvania, 19,000. Colorado, 5,000. it's just sort of interesting to see what is going on within the Republican Party. My own take is that Donald Trump still owns the Republican Party, that Republican officials and politicians, they cross him at their peril, and that sticking with Trump brings some dividends, certainly in the House of Representatives, where Republicans can carve out super conservative districts. And yet sticking with Trump can hurt, I believe, statewide in many states, for example, in the U.S. Senate elections, where a candidate must appeal to broader constituencies. So we'll have to see how that plays out in the next 2 years.
Absolutely. And locally, what do you think is going to happen with the attempt to recall Governor Newsom?
That's interesting. I mean, first of all governors in California, and I remember going back to Ronald Reagan when I was covering him when I was first starting out up here, all governors have recall efforts against them. But this one has picked up a lot of steam, and it needs 1.5 million valid signatures by March 17th. And so far, the campaign has said they've collected 1.7 million. Not all of those are valid. But the validity rate of those being counted, according to the Secretary of State, is about 84%. Mm. So the campaign figures they need about 1.8 to 2 million to turn in to get 1.5 million valid signatures.
Right.
My guess is they will get it. But I do think that getting the recall on the ballot is going to be easier than being successful about recalling Governor Newsom. There have been some recent polls that indicate that Newsom's support in the mid-60s has now dropped to like 52% in one poll and 46% in another. The last poll I saw, if you asked people specifically do they support the recall, it was only 36% support. But there's no doubt that many Californians are angry with Newsom's response to the pandemic, shutting down businesses and schools, plus the governor's unforced errors don't help, especially that dinner in Napa with the lobbyists where he violated his own protocols.
Right.
And he's getting hit from all sides. Trump supporters started the recall, but now more moderate mainstream Republicans have jumped aboard because they see a vulnerable Democrat. They see this perhaps as the only way that a Republican can win a governorship in what is now bright blue California. Some Democratic constituencies are angry at Newsom for how he has prioritized vaccination eligibility. Democrats in the legislature have complained about lack of communications. But so far, Democrats are sticking together on this fight. You know, the last time we had a recall was in 2003. Governor Gray Davis was the target. A lot of differences between 2003 and now. One is that back then, the Democrats held an 8 percentage point lead over the Republicans in terms of registered voters. Now it's 22%. So we're much more Democratic, and I think that helps Governor Newsom. And two, Governor Davis was less liked than Governor Newsom. I mean, his approval rating at the time he left office was something like 23% or so. So that's much lower than Governor Newsom. And the other thing is that the way a recall election is set up, you have two questions on the ballot. One is, shall we recall the governor? Yes or no. And two, if the governor is recalled, who would you vote to replace him? And there would be a separate slate of candidates. And if you go back in 2003, there were more than 130 candidates who ran. And there were, most of them were just people who wanted to see their name in print.
Right.
Because it's pretty easy to get on the ballot. And then you had a former porn star running, a former porn publisher. You had a former child actor. And, of course, you had Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you had a few political people and a bunch of no-names, you know, who got 10 or 15 votes, and that's about it. What is interesting to see how this would play out, you would have two campaigns going on at once. One is the recall, and the other is who do you vote for,
right,
if just in case. Well, there are three potential leading Republican candidates out there, none of which has the celebrity of Arnold Schwarzenegger. One is John Cox, who's a San Diego venture capitalist, but he voted for Donald Trump. The other one is Kevin Faulkner, former San Diego mayor. He's considered a moderate, but he voted for Donald Trump. And those two are running. And the third, who is leaning that way, is Richard Grenell, who was former President Trump's acting director of national intelligence. And he voted for Trump. I just think in California, if the word gets out that these three Republicans are not only a Republican in a Democratic state, but they voted for Donald Trump, whose name is still pretty toxic in this state, I think it hurts them a lot. So I just think it makes the entire process that more interesting.
Always fascinating when I get to talk with you, Steve, but we're running low on time. Before I let you go, I got one more question for you. Let's look ahead to the midterm elections of next year. Do you see the Democrats holding on to the House and the Senate?
That's going to be interesting. The job for the Democrats is going to be pretty tough in the House. They have a 10-seat margin right now. Republicans hold most state houses where they will be in charge of redistricting. Remember, we just had a census.
Right.
And that includes Florida, which is growing and will probably add a seat. Texas will probably add 2 seats. North Carolina may add a seat. And so you've got 6 seats right there that just on the natural could go Republican. That would be enough right there to defeat the Democrats, and Democrats could lose control. Plus, California very well might lose 1 seat because our population has not been growing as large as some of these other states. I think the Democrats could have some difficulty holding onto the House. It'll be really tough. The Senate, I think, may offer the Democrats a better shot at control of the Senate. In November, President Biden carried 25 states, that's half, and the Senate is split 50-50. So far, Biden's approval numbers are pretty good. I mean, they're actually very good considering how the country is split. For the Democrats to strengthen their hold on the Senate and build any kind of a majority, they have to hold the 2 states that flipped in 2020 in Arizona and Georgia. They were special elections, and they're up in 2022. Then maybe win one other state, North Carolina or conceivably Texas or Pennsylvania. The good news for the Democrats is that those 2 new senators in Arizona and Georgia have very strong approval ratings so far. And so far, 4 Republican senators have announced they will not run for re-election next
year.
In 2 of those states, North Carolina and Pennsylvania, they conceivably could go Democratic. Outside chance in Ohio, but I would think Pennsylvania and North Carolina would offer the Democrats the best choice. The bad news for Democrats is that Republicans in 33 states are pushing for legislation to restrict voting access. At last count, more than 160 bills have been introduced in various states limiting mail voting, strengthening voter ID requirements and the registration process, allowing for more aggressive methods to remove voters from the polls. Those proposed new laws are in many red states like Texas, but also in Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania that flipped for Biden last November. More than a dozen pieces of legislation in Pennsylvania. That is one thing going against the Democrats should the Republicans be successful in limiting access to voting to some degree. One other thing on the same subject, Republican leaders in the House just announced 47 targets against what they call the socialist agenda. And 2 of those targets are from Northern California, John Garamendi and Josh Harder. What they call a key part of the socialist agenda is this $1.9 trillion stimulus bill,
right,
which, according to all other public opinion polls, has like 79 to 80% approval in this country.
Yep.
I just find that kind of tone deaf. It's going to be an interesting election in 2 years, no doubt about it.
Well, we could go all day, and I can't wait to have you back, but we're out of time, Steve. But thank you so much for joining me this morning. Steve Swat is an award-winning political reporter for KCRA and author of a couple of books, along with your team. One is Game Changers, 12 Elections That Transformed California, and the new one, Paving the Way. You can find them both on Amazon. Steve, thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure, Doug.
This has been The Public File. If you'd like us to cover your nonprofit, email sacpsa@entercom.com, sacpsa@entercom.com. I'm Doug Thomas. Enjoy your Sunday, and thanks for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.